Welcome to Paranormal Coffee Hour. We're your hosts, Jen.
And Courtney.
And we're pouring you a strong cup of the weird, the wonderful, and the woohoo. On today's Paranormal Coffee Hour, we're going to be talking about mermaids.
Ooh, fishies?
Or are they fairies?
Well, depends on who you're asking, I guess.
So according to Sky Alexander and the author of Mermaids, the Myths, Legends, and Lore, she says, we depend on water for our very existence, so it's no surprise that people have long attributed magical and divine properties to water. The word mer comes from the Old English mer, meaning sea. In French, the word for sea is mer, and the word for mother is mer, suggesting that the sea is mother to us all.
Oh.
And as the sea nurtures people from all cultures and walks of life, so in one form or another do mermaids appear in virtually all cultures, past and present. And their stories, as you'll see today, are as colorful as the people who tell them. So today, the question becomes, are mermaids real?
Good question.
What do you think, Courtney?
Well, I mean, why not? Because who has been able to find out what's in the ocean?
Exactly. I think there's a great potential for them being real because only 5%, that's right, 5% of the ocean has been discovered.
Yeah. There's been more discovery in the, help me out here, outer space. than there has been in the damn oceans. Ocean, even, they're a thimble.
It is. It's about a thimble of it that's been actually explored and researched. So when we look at it that way, the chance of something unknown is very probable. So we'll look at, is it possible today? So we say the term mermaids, but we actually should be using the term merfolk because there is more than just Ariel singing in the sea, looking for her bits and bobs.
Oh yeah, there's mermen too.
There's actually merfolk. So what Courtney and I are going to discuss now is actually the different kinds of merfolk that have existed through myths and history. And it's quite interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ones. They're not all just mermaids, merfolk.
Mermaids are maids of the sea, and they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. Some have scales, some are smooth, like dolphin, and some don't have a tail at all.
What?
Some breathe underwater and some can just hold their breath for a long time. Some are simply young women who live in the sea. Some are just men who live in the sea. Mermaids live in lakes and rivers and the ocean. Some have the power to walk on land by swapping their tails for legs like a human. But most mermaids will transform back into their natural state when they come in contact with water, as they will avoid water at all costs when on land. Mermaids are often thought as just female. However, there are mermen, merchildren, merbabies, and according to the Bible, merdogs.
Yeah, that one's awesome.
We'll talk more about that one later. So that's the mermaid side. What else do we have under the merfolk title?
We also have sirens. Now, let's not get them confused. Sirens have the biggest reputation of being mischievous or deadly with passing sailors throughout the world. Many people are perplexed by these creatures. Sirens first appeared in Greek mythology as Persephone's servants, and when she went away, Demeter, Persephone's mother, the agriculture goddess, dispatched them to find her by calling to her with their lovely voices. They were characterized as wicked, which has remained true to this day. They can conjure a storm, fog, foretell death, read minds, and wreak havoc at their pleasure.
Ooh.
Some people might call them witches.
Those are some badass merfolk.
Amen. The ancient spelling of siren is sirene, meaning the ones that tie or grab, referring to their enchanting songs. The sirens in Greek mythology were women with a human lower body and wings of a bird, so they didn't even have the scales or anything. But at some point, they lost the feathers in a singing contest with the muses and were not able to fly. They either died or turned into mermaids, depending on which legend you read. Sirens are sore losers, so they might be taking their anger out for losing on humans.
So they were birds before they were in the sea.
Correct.
Okay. So our next type of merfolk is the water nymph. Water nymphs can be either a spirit living near the water or a natural goddess like me, which is a
absolutely,
which is a class of inferior female divinities. They are not considered immortal, but can live for an extremely long time. There are different types of water nymphs, which are distinguished by the nature around them. They are known for taking care of their existing bodies of water and nature that they are connected to. They do this by growing plants or blessing a nearby city with clean water. I am so sorry, Flint, Michigan. We need to get you more water nymphs.
No kidding.
The different water nymphs include the Nereides, which are the protectors of the sea, the Naiades, which are the protectors of fresh water, and the Oceanids, which are protectors of the deep ocean. The Nereides are mostly found in the Mediterranean Sea and tend to hide in deep cavernous spaces within the earth. Is that you, Court?
Mm-hmm.
In your cave?
Amen.
They are some of the most beautiful creatures in existence and can have either legs or tails, depending on the body of water. I wonder what distinguishes that.
I'm not sure.
Their personalities are friendly and will help sailors in times of need.
Absolutely, I'm friendly.
They love children and often give birth to influential heirs like Achilles. You can find them hanging around the god Poseidon and will often fight each other for the chance to carry his trident. The Naiades are the protectors of fresh water. They can be found in most fresh bodies of water like rivers, springs, wells, and even fountains. I've never known a fountain to have a water nymph before.
Maybe we're looking in the wrong fountains.
I guess. They are, for the most part, good and nurturing spirits to people and the water in which they protect. Usually, these freshwater sources are the main life-giving current to which nearby civilizations are built. Offerings will occasionally be made to keep the Naiade in a good mood, so the waters will continually be blessed. It's said that if you swim in a place protected by a Naiade, you could absorb some of her magical qualities. These waters have often been known to heal the sick, inspire poets, and bring fertility to women and crops. They're widely known for their beauty with flowing long hair and often roam around without clothes on, leading both men and gods falling to love with them.
What the hell?
If she is provoked or a dramatic romance occurs, this will be reflected in the waters. She can unleash flash floods or inflict droughts on her enemies. She can change the quality of the water, making it undrinkable if she's irritated. Naiades can live as long as their body of water remains strong. If the water runs low, their strength slips away and could eventually die.
Oh, no.
Our last one of the water nymphs is the Oceanids. An Oceanid is a water nymph that lives in the deep water of the ocean. There are more Oceanids than any other mermaid population. Important water goddesses like Metis, who was Zeus's first wife, whom he later impregnated with Athena. Other important Oceanid demigods are Amphitrite and Doris. Their main role is to protect the deep oceans and serve as wives and lovers to the gods. They watch over their children who later become gods themselves. I don't want this job.
Their main job is to, excuse me, say fucking what?
Patriarchy in the ocean. Because of their compassion, many sailors dedicate prayers and sacrifices to the Oceanids in order to receive protection from the deadly sea storms.
All right, now we're going to take a look at the Selkies. Selkies are found in the British Isles as well as Iceland. Though Selkies are not cold-blooded, Selkies have the ability to shapeshift from a seal-like creature to a human who can walk on land. Selkies shed their seal-like skins to become human and hide from them sight so they can suit back up when done on land and return home. I love that they're going to suit back up.
Suit back up. Just zip that right back up.
If these skins are found, the women are forced to stay on land and enslaved to the one who has their seal suit and lives as a loyal wife. Unfortunately, the Selkies have insatiable longing for the ocean, and if she finds the skin, she will put it back on and run to the ocean and never look back.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Maybe I'm a Selkie and somebody's got my fucking skin. All right. We're also going to talk about the Kelpies. Kelpies is a rare form of mermaid found in Scotland, which can be found in a mixture of fresh and salt water. They are aquatic shapeshifters and can only look semi-human when in their mermaid form. Other than that, they can transform themselves into hippos or horses. They do their best to avoid humans and can even disguise themselves as seaweed or water plants. That's fucking fantastic.
Okay, they shapeshift into hippos
or horses.
Which I get hippos because they're aquatic also to some extent, but horses?
Yeah, Is that where the seahorse comes into play?
Maybe.
Like, I get the seals, I get the hippos.
I get hippos, yeah.
But then they can also disguise themselves as seaweed or water plants.
That's impressive. Maybe you're eating on a kelpie when you're eating some of that delicious seaweed, that dried seaweed.
But then, I guess, when you think about the Little Mermaid, some more of Disney makes a little more sense.
I need to rewatch the Little Mermaid then, if that makes sense.
Well, Triton did have some horses, if you... I thought you meant seaweed. No, he did have some horses, quote unquote.
Okay.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around some of this.
Yeah, you and me both. So where do we first see mention of merfolk or mermaids in history? Courtney, what do you have?
I've got the myth of Artegadus is one of the oldest, dating back to 1000 BCE. Artegadus was the Assyrian goddess of fertility who protected her people around what is today northern Syria and Iraq. Her followers formed a cult and created a temple near a lake or pool. Although all surviving visual symbols and icons of Artegadus show her to have human characteristics, the legend of her being a mermaid endures. The story mentions her falling in love with a human shepherd, but killing him by accident. Overcome with grief, shame, and guilt, she retreated to a lake to hide. In a bid to conceal her great beauty and remain hidden in the water, she tried changing herself into a fish, but could not. Only her lower half transformed into a fish tail. Artegadus's legend spread throughout the ancient Near East, reaching as far as Rome and Greece. Her legacy is as the mother of fertility, revering fish and doves as sacred and protecting them.
That's interesting. I have one a little later in history. This comes from around 300-ish BC, and the source of this one is witches lore, mermaids and magic. There is one story of Alexander the Great that tells when he found the fountain of immortality, he filled a flask with its immortal waters. When he returned home, he washed his sister's hair with the water. Later, at the age of 32, Alexander died of illness. His sister went mad with grief and attempted suicide by drowning herself in the sea. However, because Alexander had bathed her hair from the fountain of youth, she did not drown. Instead, she turned into a mermaid and supposedly lived in the Aegean for hundreds of years. During her life in the sea, if she ever encountered a sailor, she would always ask them the same question. Is Alexander the king alive? If the sailor answered, he lives and reigns and conquers the world, she would let them continue their voyage unharmed. However, any other answer would result in her transformation into a gorgon like Medusa. So a gorgon is a creature that has snakes that turn humans to stone.
I find this fascinating.
She would then send the ship and everybody on board to their murky graves.
So we've got the mermaids of Noah's Ark out of the myths, legends, and lore. Merfolk even appear in the beloved Bible story of Noah's Ark, according to Christian mythology of the infamous flood. A 15th century illustration from the notable Nuremberg Bible pictures a mermaid, a merman, and even a mer-dog swimming beside Noah's Ark.
Oh, a mer-dog.
That is fucked up. Now, I asked this earlier. Does the mer-dog have a tail on its tail?
Yes. There is no second tail on the tail
so how
of the mer-dog.
How's it wag his tail on its tail?
He swims. He's got a fishy tail, not a doggy tail.
Huh. Poor doggy.
Other origin stories go back to ancient Greece, where mermaids or merfolk were referred to as sea goddesses. According to the Roman poet Ovid's epic Metamorphoses, when the Trojan ships had burned during the Trojan War, their wood transformed into the bodies of sea goddesses, or as Ovid described them, the green daughters of the sea. Merrow comes from the mir, meaning sea, and oig, meaning maid. There is an Irish legend that says pagan women became mermaids when St. Patrick chased them from the land in the process of converting Ireland from the old religion to Christianity. So were those women the snakes, quote unquote, that he was driving out?
I mean, it was always the pagans that were the snakes. So here goes the witches.
Which is interesting because, just a little side note here, snakes in pagan tradition are seen as good and wise.
Right. It's kind of like the owls.
Mm-hmm. Another origin legend goes back to Latvia and Estonia, where according to folklore there of the indigenous people, children who were drowned in the Red Sea by the pharaoh morphed into mermaids. I'm assuming they're referring to the pharaoh of Egypt.
Huh. So if the pharaoh is dumping kids into the Red Sea, because there's a widely held theory that fallen angels become mermaids.
Yep.
And then there's another one that wicked souls who have been turned into seals are a form of punishment. So those could also
the pagan witches.
Be the pagan witches. Mm-hmm. And on Orkney, it is said that a person who has been cursed is turned into a selkie. Makes one wonder think.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting. Well, we do know one thing, that the mermaid origin story isn't set in stone. We don't know exactly where they came from. We don't know exactly how they came into existence. But what we do know is that they exist everywhere in the world. And we're going to share with you some stories from around the world as to what their mermaids are.
All right, we're going to start with Melusine in Europe. Living in fresh water, Melusine is portrayed with a fish or serpent tail and often has wings. Kind of reminds me of a dragon.
Yeah, it's like a, what did we say, the siren?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Many European royal families claim to be descended from her, such as the Lusignan royal house. In one literary tale, Melusine is the daughter of the fairy Presnin and King Ilenas of Scotland. She agrees to marry a nobleman as long as he never looks at her while she's taking a bath. But of course, he breaks his oath. Of course.
Of course.
In a German tale, her song attracts a shepherd who kisses her three times. Each day he visits her, she turns more serpentine until he's too afraid to come anymore. He instead decides to marry a village girl, but at their wedding, Melusine poisons the food with her snake tail and they all die.
Absolute revenge.
Fuck them all if you can't listen.
My tale is coming from Europe also, but this is in the village of Zenor in Cornwall, England. For centuries, a church dedicated to Saint Sinara has stood in the village of Zenor. The stone structure was built between the 13th and the 15th centuries. Inside, visitors can find one of the most intriguing features, a bench end with carvings of fish on the seat and a woman admiring herself in a mirror, and it is known as the mermaid chair. According to local lore in times long, long ago, a beautiful and richly dressed woman would occasionally attend services at the church. She would appear from time to time over the course of many years, but never seemed to age. Lucky girl. Locals noted her beauty and her lovely singing voice, but no one knew where she came from. Eventually, the mysterious woman came to fancy the church warden's son, a young man named Matthew Trewella. One day, Matthew followed her home, and the two were never seen again. One day at Pendower Cove, a mermaid appeared to an anchored ship and asked them to move the anchor as it was blocking her door and preventing access to her husband and children. The mysterious woman turned out to be Morvarin, one of the daughters of Lir, king of the ocean, per Cornish folklore. The villagers then knew their mystery visitor had taken Matthew to the sea. One version of the story says that the bench was carved to commemorate the events and to warn other young men who may be tempted by mysterious women. Another version says that the mermaid chair was the very bench on which the mystery woman would sit as she sang in church prior to enticing young Matthew away from his home. This came from the Atlas Obscura, mermaid chair of Zenor, England.
I like that. So she's kind of like a cougar.
A mermaid cougar.
That's awesome.
Mermaid cougars do exist.
All right, we can check out Lorelei in Germany right away. The origins of the Lorelei folktale are more literary than the others on this list. Lorelei is the name of a steep rock on the banks of the Rhine in Germany. In 1801, German author Clemens Brentano wrote a poem inspired by the rock's name about a woman named Lorelei who is accused of killing men after she's jilted by a lover. A bishop condemns her to a nunnery And on the way there, she climbs a rock and, thinking she sees her lover, falls to her death. A couple of decades later, in 1824, Heinrich Heine wrote a more popular poem which depicts a beautiful and singing Lorelei sitting on the rock and distracting men traveling along the Rhine to their deaths. We're going to jump over to Greece right away, and we've got the Scylla. Scylla's no mortal. She's an immortal devastation from the Odyssey by Homer. In Greek mythology, Scylla is a legendary fish-tailed woman who torments seafarers along with her monstrous counterpart, Charybdis. She first appears in Homer's The Odyssey, where she devours six men from Odysseus's ship. They writhed gasping as Scylla swung them up her cliff, and there, at her cavern's mouth, she bolted them down raw. Mmm, delicious.
Sushi!
Ovid blames her monstrous form on Cyrus in the Metamorphosis, saying, "Cyrus cursed Scylla when a man preferred her over Cyrus." Her story is also retold in the poem Endymion by John Keats, as well as in James Joyce's Ulysses. Oh, what a mouthful.
That was a mouthful.
In more ways than one.
So now we're going to head over to the Slavic area of Europe, and we're going to talk about the Rusalka. In Slavic countries, the beautiful Rusalka lurk in lakes and ponds, watching for handsome young men to drown, or their benevolent fertility goddesses, or their women who drown themselves to escape abusive relationships. Their stories vary quite a bit. Sometimes Rusalka tickle their victims to death.
Say fucking what?
Tickle. Mm-hmm. Tickle to death.
Consent, peeps. Consent.
They're usually depicted as young and beautiful, with very long hair, all the better to drown men with. Another version of merfolk in the Slavic Eurasia area is the Vodyanoi. The Vodyanoi appear as old men with fish faces, algae covering their naked bodies and slimy beards.
Just what I want to see is a dirty old man with a fish face.
Oh my God. They sometimes drown unwary anglers or capture them and force them to serve as slaves in their underwater lairs.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
They store human souls in teapots.
Oh.
Another use for teapots. I guess they don't like tea. But to stay on their good side, put a pinch of tobacco in the water. Yeah, that's bizarre.
I mean, I gave up smoking a long time ago, but I guess.
Might have to take it back up again if you're near.
Oh, fuck. All right, we're going to hit up Africa and the Mami water. Mami water refers to many water creatures from Africa mythology and legend, usually portrayed as a woman, but sometimes a man. Some tales show her bringing people to her underwater home and granting them spiritual enlightenment. In a different tale, a man steals her possessions and she haunts their dreams. Well, no shit. You steal my shit, I'm going to beat the shit out of you. Demanding the thief returns her possessions and stays sexually faithful to her forever or else. Makes sense. She can heal according to some stories, but also inflict ailments. In Southern African folklore, she can fly in a tornado. She's a complex figure from many African societies, and her legends cross the Atlantic with the onset of slavery. And then we're going to hop over to Cameroon. Djengu. These water spirits serve as messengers between humans and the gods. They're beautiful with fish tails and long, wild hair. Use some conditioner. Their healers and their folklore is often related to the Mami water stories. The Douala and Bakwari people worship her in cults.
So from Africa, we head over to Asia, where we head to China and the Hai Ho Sang. With the body of a large fish and the shaved head of a Buddhist priest, the giant Hai Ho Sang drags entire boats underwater, drowning all on board. To repel him, burn feathers on deck.
Where the fuck you getting the feathers from? It's first question.
Try not to burn your boat. If that doesn't do the trick, Courtney, you must perform an intricate dance to the beat of a ritual gong.
Because you are always bringing a gong with feathers on a boat, right?
I hope you learn that dance and you don't forget your gong.
So many questions.
Oh, God. In Japan, where we head next.
Stories get better.
Oh, God, yeah. Is the kappa. Kappas are green humanoid creatures with webbed hands and feet, turtle shells on their back, Teenage Mutant Ninja
Turtle
Turtles,
power,
and a depression on their head that retains water.
They make pills for that.
I wonder if they had like encephalitis as children. If the water runs out, the kappa is severely weakened. Take note, ladies and gentlemen, they enjoy cucumbers, wrestling humans underwater until they maybe die, and they will sometimes steal a magical organ located in a person's anus.
I believe we discussed this at the live. That is usually your prostate if you're male.
Oh, shit.
I'm not sure if you heard that part.
Oh, God. I don't know. What is it if you're female?
We weren't exactly sure, but watch out for flying cucumbers.
Make sure to take cucumbers with you on your next voyage in Japan.
All right, we're going to hop over to Australia. The Muljawonk, or the Winkers, hide in a seaweed in the Murray River of South Australia. Aboriginal parents warn their children not to play too close to the waters at night, or else the wonks might gobble them up. Oh, the folklore of parental lies.
It's kind of like La Llorona in Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to hop on over to the Solomon Islands, the Adaro. Adaro are malevolent merfolk who shoot at humans with flying fish. The fuck you say?
Duck.
They have a shark's dorsal fin, tail fins for feet, and gills behind their ears. If you see one, duck. You don't want that flying fish to hit you in the face. No, I don't want no damn fish to hit me in the face. What the hell? I'll
slap you with a trout.
No shit.
So as we continue to travel around the world, we're headed back into the Western Hemisphere and into South America with the country of Colombia and El Hombre Caiman. Once a man, after being caught spying on a nude woman, was condemned to live out the rest of his days as an alligator with a human head.
That's crazy.
Once a year, this man rises from the waters and hunts human prey. You know, I'm all for punishing creepy dudes, but maybe something a little less dangerous than an alligator. Just a thought.
I'm all for that.
In Brazil, they have the story of the Aipupiara. Say that 10 times. Aipupiara. This sea creature was part of the mythology of the Tupi peoples of Brazil during the 16th century. With seal heads, human bodies, and fish tails, they often attack people and eat parts of their bodies.
Seal heads. Human bodies.
But a tail of a fish.
What a hot fucking mess.
They sometimes kill people by hugging them, Courtney.
Fuck that noise.
Courtney loves hugs.
No bueno.
All right, Courtney, what else do you have in Brazil?
Brazil also has its stories of Ayara, the Lady of the Waters. Originally a water snake, over the years, through folklore, Ayara changed into an immortal woman with long flowing hair again and piercing green eyes who lured men to her underwater palace. To this day, Ayara is thought by some to have been responsible for the accidents and disappearances of many men of the Amazon. Not that the Amazon is a fucking jungle and dangerous.
No, it was totally a mermaid.
That makes a lot more sense. Yeah. All right, got it.
Most people don't realize this, but North America also has mermaid legends. The first one we're going to share with you is known as the Kualalupalik in Alaska. The Kualalupalik is a human-like sea creature often compared to an evil and ugly mermaid. It has green skin, long hair, long fingernails that look like claws. She wears what's called an amati, a sort of parka worn by Inuit women, which contains a pouch to hold their babies on their back. This garment allows the Kualalupalik to carry away the babies and children it finds near the coastline.
I mean, it's got to wear a parka. It's fucking cold up there.
This creature makes a distinctive humming sound just under the water. The noise is meant to entice young children to the shore so she can snatch them up and take them away. What happens next is debated. Some believe the children are taken and hidden away in a cave where they are put under a sleeping spell. I wonder what she does after that. Others say the Kualalupalik eats the children. One thing they both agree on is that the creature feeds off the energy of its victims. The energy of the innocent is what gives them the power to appear young and live forever. As the child ages, so does the Kualalupalik, only in reverse, therefore deeming the creature immortal. The Kualalupalik does not always wait at the water's edge. Sometimes they will knock on the ice from below, enticing the child to search for sound until they reach a weak part of the ice where they can break through and snatch the child away. Regardless of whether or not this is true, The telling of this story by the Inuit people to their children has helped them keep them safe from the dangers of the icy waters below.
I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Not only does Alaska have mermaid legends, we also have them in the Great Lakes, of course, because why not? The Nibinabe are a race of water sprites from
Anishinaabe
folklore. Nibinabe are usually described as being shaped like mermaids with human torsos and fish tails. They are said to be frightened off by loud noises. Mermaids and mermen are also used as a clan symbol in the Ojibwe tribe, whose mermaid clan and its totem are called the Nibinabe or Nibanaba.
So what we're saying is the Ojibwe, which the Chippewa are part of the Ojibwe, they have a totem to the Nibinabe, the merfolk?
Which is so weird because there's also a totem to Sasquatch.
Yeah, there is a totem to Sasquatch. So the Ojibwe tribe has the Nibinabe, and they might not be wrong that this exists because I'm taking you to Lake Superior. You've heard of mermaids of the high seas before, but have you heard the Lake Superior accounts of mermen? They weren't singing love songs and combing their hair with forks, that's for sure.
It's too damn cold there.
Back in 1812, a merman was spotted by the Northwest Fur Company Voyageurs traveling near Thunder Bay Island. Voyageurs, for those of you who don't know, were the men who traveled between the Great Lakes and into some of the rivers, like in Wisconsin, it would have been the Fox, to sell fur. Other voyagers later chimed in with sightings of this same creature in that same area. According to local Native Americans, the merman was Manitou Nibanibas, the god of lakes and waters. Now, I want to make it clear that even though the name is somewhat similar with Nibanibas, this may not have been the same tribe. They don't tell us which one it was, but there's a lot of tribes around the Great Lakes.
Oh, yes. So if you listen to our first podcast, which kind of came out crappy.
The Great Lakes Triangle.
You had heard us discuss that there's a ghost that they called Grandpa that will kind
pop
of
up.
Pop up and be like, scare the bejesus out of you.
Holy bejeebus.
Maybe it wasn't a ghost.
Maybe it was a merman.
Right.
Maybe they were too scared to really get a good look at what they were seeing.
Right. It's not only scared the person diving, it's so that merman was like, get the fuck out of here. And the guy's like, oh, it must have been a ghost.
It's easier for us to believe in ghosts than it is to believe in mermaids.
Right. Like, when we did all that research on the Great Lakes, that didn't even come up.
No, it didn't.
Like, my mind is blown.
Yeah. Like we said before, we might have to go back to the Great Lakes and look at them again.
Oh, Lord.
See what else we're missing.
No kidding.
The key here, though, ladies and gentlemen, is let's talk about some of the recent sightings of mermaids. And I'm serious when I say recent. One of the most popular sightings that has been taking place is a mermaid sighting in Israel. Local tourists in the Israeli town of Kiryat Yam have been flocking to the coast in hopes of glimpsing a creature that most people only believe exists in fairy tales. An alleged mermaid said to resemble a cross between a fish and a young girl only appears at sunset. It performs a few tricks for onlookers before disappearing for the night. I wonder what tricks she performs.
And for what? Fish? Crackers?
I just keep thinking of a seal like clapping.
I know.
One of the first people to see the mermaid, Shlomo Cohen, said, I was with friends when suddenly we saw a woman laying on the sand in a weird way. At first, I thought she was just another sunbather, but when we approached, she jumped into the water and disappeared. We were all in shock because we saw she had a tail. The sightings apparently began several months ago. Now, I want to give you a perspective here in terms of timeline. This is an article that came from Mermaid Sightings Claimed in Israel by Benjamin Radford. It was updated October 14th of 2022. So I believe the sightings have actually started much prior to that, but I would say probably within the last 2 years. So maybe as early as 2020. Here's the kicker, though. The town's tourism board is offering a $1 million reward for the first person to photograph the creature.
What?
Yeah. So what you can find out there is actually a video taken by American tourists of this mermaid. Now, they claim it's a mermaid. It is a little bit hard to see, though we have looked at it and we watched it in our live version of Paranormal Coffee Hour. And I don't know. I think it's pretty compelling.
It is compelling, but that guy keeps going back to his friend for his reaction. Like, bro, we don't care about his reaction. Keep it on the whatever we're watching.
So part of it is people thought, well, could it be staged?
Right.
But the way in which that creature moves off the rock, I mean, unless it's CGI, which is possible, it's pretty compelling that that would be not a movement a human could perform.
No, it is very seal mermaid-ish like.
But once again, we have the technology to recreate this stuff. So they did not receive the $1 million reward because it could not be verified that that was for sure a mermaid.
I do have to say, at least the town is asking for pictures or whatever and not for the mermaid itself.
The mermaid body.
Yeah, at least they're not trying to kill it, capture it, whatever. So there's that.
True.
In 1943, World War II, Japan's soldiers were flying over the Kei Islands in Indonesia, and they had actually seen some mermaids. Some were swimming, some were on the beach, and one actually ended up dead on the beach. And it had pink skin. It was about 4 feet, 9 inches, had spikes along its head. The mouth had, it was like carp-like with teeth and everything. And Sergeant Taro Hariba urged scientists to study it, but no research was ever done. They're like, man, you crazy. You were smoking the good shit.
They probably thought he had effects of war.
Right. Which, I mean, don't blame him. What the fuck? A pink skin, 4 foot 9 inch, spikes along the head, mouth of a carp? Come on, bro.
Too bad they couldn't take the body with them.
Right. With fish tail and all this other shit. I mean, good shit over there, huh?
I think the funniest story that we've heard comes out of Zimbabwe, Africa. The story I'm about to share with you was written by Aaron Conway Smith for the Global Post, and it's entitled Zimbabwe Mermaids Appeased by Traditional Beer Ritual.
I mean, that makes sense. They're part of the Fae family.
A mermaid-plagued dam in Zimbabwe is up and working after traditional healers brewed beer to appease the mischievous water spirits. By the way, this is coming from 2012. The mermaids had harassed workers installing water pumps at a dam near the small town of Gokwe in northern Zimbabwe, according to local media reports. Water Resources Minister Samuel Sipepa Nkomo told a Senate committee last week that work on the pumps at the Gokwe Dam had stopped after terrified workers complained of machines breaking down under mysterious circumstances, and they blamed mermaids. Nkomo said the same problem had been reported at Osborne Dam near Mutare in the country's east. He called for traditional rituals to be performed at the dams, including traditionally brewed beer, to rid them of the mermaid menace. At Osborne Dam, divers had been sent down to investigate the cause of blockages in the pumps, but returned to the water's surface, vowing to never go back down.
Oh, dear.
This is a quote, ladies and gentlemen, so bear with me. We even hired whites, thinking that our boys did not want to work, but they also returned, saying they would not return to work there again, Nkomo told the Senate committee. The problem at Gokwe was reportedly solved late last week when the water ministry hired traditional healers to conduct the rituals. The traditional leaders held a ceremony in which they slaughtered cattle and brewed beer to appease the water spirits. I don't believe in mermaids, but the community that lives in the area does, Nkomo said. According to the Voice of America, belief in mermaids persists among some Zimbabweans, though many are skeptical of such claims.
And yet, when they appeased the mermaids, they were able to continue on with their fixing of the dam or building of the dam.
Yeah, surprisingly, everything just magically was fine.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And what we know about fae and fairies, if we include mermaids, which they often are, merfolk are included in fae and fairy tales.
Yes.
They are the protectors of the land and the water.
Yes.
So if a dam, which oftentimes can cause damage to both land and water.
Yes.
If the mermaids don't like that, they're going to stop it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So if they are not appeased.
Yeah. So part of what we need to discuss now is it even possible for these mermaids to exist? Some would say yes, and some would say no. But once again, may I remind you that only 5% of the oceans have been explored. As Courtney had said earlier, there has been more exploration in space than there has in our oceans.
There's caves and crevices that haven't even been touched in the bottom of the ocean floor.
The other thing we have to take into account is the fact that all civilizations, including our Native American civilizations, have mermaid stories. Now, that's one thing if we're talking about these stories happening today with the advancement of technology and the way information moves. But we're talking about a time when information did not move that way.
Correct.
And a lot of their appearances are very similar.
And there's also QHHT therapy that has brought up that there are mermaids also.
Mm-hmm. We can't forget the quantum healing hypnosis therapy session. Oftentimes people have discovered mermaid realms.
Correct.
Including Atlantis. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about, is there potentially a scientific explanation for how mermaids could exist? This explanation is called the aquatic ape theory. It is believed that humans evolved from apes that lived in or around bodies of water. The theory tries to tie together many human anatomical traits as adaptations to an ancient life foraging on shorelines and in water. Believers of this idea assert that humans share unique similarities with aquatic mammals like seals and dolphins. This idea, the aquatic ape, had been born in and around 1960 when the marine biologist Alistair Hardy published a speculative essay in New Scientist asking, was man more aquatic in the past? Hardy suggested that humans had subcutaneous fat layers similar to those of marine mammals. Oh, I can second that one for sure.
I agree, but I mean...
And he claimed that the reduction of body hair in humans served to make us more streamlined for swimming than other apes.
Well, swimmers do shave everything, so that does have a point.
Instead of trying to explain the adaptive value of skin, fat, and hair to recent humans, Hardy proposed that these traits were leftover relics of a distant time when a lineage of ancient apes had left the trees and had begun to hunt and forage for marine foods. In Hardy's scenario, bipediality evolved as a strategy for wading, carrying foodstuffs, and hunting in the water. Now, unfortunately, many say that there's no fossil evidence pointing to such an aquatic ape. But Elaine Morgan, who is a television screenwriter and a popular writer, she, in her view, she said that females might have foraged and the relative safety of the shoreline where the evolution of bipedal walking would help them and their children survive. Like Hardy, Elaine emphasized that some human divers can hold their breath for a very long time. And to this, she added the idea that infants and young children reflexively hold their breath when submerged in water. She even suggests that tears from the eyes and sweat might both have evolved to dispose of excess salt from seawater. There are two examples that we have today of civilizations that have adapted themselves to the water, as Elaine suggests. One is in Korea, and the other is in Southeast Asia, off the coast of Thailand. Courtney, can you share with us the story about these two very different and well-adapted people?
So we got the Mokan people of Southeast Asia inhabit the islands off the western coast of Thailand, known in Thai as Chao Le, or people of the sea, and also sometimes referred to as sea gypsies. The Mokan have such vast knowledge of their surrounding waters that they live off its flora and fauna. Because of the amount of time they spend diving, Mokan children have adapted extraordinary underwater eyesight. Ooh, that burns my eyes just thinking about it. Their accommodated visual focus allows them to see below water as clearly as most people can see above it. Though their traditional way of life is being threatened because of changes in the neighboring community, some Moken people still spend most of their lives on handcrafted wooden boats called kebang, which are equipped with bedroom, kitchen, and living space. And then we're going to go to Haenyeo, free diving mermaids. For hundreds of years, women from Korea's Jeju Island have practiced a form of free diving that defies mortal limits. These women who free dive with nothing more than wetsuit and goggles, no tank, can plunge up to 65 feet and hold their breath for 2 to 3 minutes, and some can hold their breath for as long as 10 minutes.
Holy shit.
They dive for abalone, squid, seaweed, octopus, and other small shellfish or edibles of the sea. Fuck that. I can't even read a page and a half without taking a breath.
So I guess this is a good time, ladies and gentlemen, for you to put down your cup of coffee and ask yourself, do mermaids, do they really exist? Is it possible that in that vastness of ocean we haven't even uncovered yet, that there could be a race of human-like creatures that live under the sea?
Under the sea.
Courtney would be Sebastian singing. So, as always, keep it weird.
Keep it wonderful.
And keep it woohoo.